Tonight I want to cover the second, third, and fourth chapters of the book. Last Wednesday night, we introduced the book by giving a brief summary of the background of it, and then studying the first chapter. Now, the first chapter presents the condition of the people of that day. It really is a summary of that, the condition, and now the second, third, and fourth chapters pretty well summarize what the book is going to deal with. Now, in the second chapter, the first four verses, in the light of what we had last time, the writer now turns to what shall be in the latter days. Now, here's what's coming in the latter days. The latter days always refers to the Messianic period. I'll not take time tonight to prove that, but you can do it by going to Joel, the second chapter, in verse 28 to 32, and Peter's quotation of that in Acts 2:17, and then taking Peter's statement in the third chapter of the book of Acts, where he says all the prophets told of these days. Now, the these days of Acts 3 would be the last days of Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. We're not going into that. Maybe later on we will. But right now, let's move into our lesson. Now, the word that Isaiah, the prophet, the son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now, the first verse of the first chapter began like this. The vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now, in one of them, he said, I saw a vision. In the second chapter, I saw the word. That just simply means that he understood it. It was revealed to him. Or in Revelation 1, and I forget the verse, when John turned to see a voice that spoke to him, then he saw the glorified Christ. Now, he didn't see the voice, but he saw the source of it. Well, that's what he sees here. He sees the word as he understands it, having come from God. Now, all right, and it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. Now, the nations are the Gentiles. Now, here in the latter day, the mountain of Jehovah's house is his kingdom, the central place of his rule. That would be established in the latter days. That would be the church or the kingdom of the New Testament. Now, all nations. So here you can see the people of all nations that are streamed up to Jerusalem, up to the city of God. All right, it moves on. Now, all nations shall flow unto it, and many peoples. Now, notice that plural. So your nations and your plurals, I mean your peoples, pertain to the Gentiles. So here is a clear prophecy that the Gentiles were going to come into the kingdom of God that would be established in the latter days. Why the Jews couldn't see that, I don't know. But they never could accept that. And many peoples shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of Jehovah, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. Now here in the latter days, here's what's going to happen. The mountain of Jehovah's house is going to be established on the top of the mountain. Now here further, all nations shall flow unto it. Many peoples shall go and say, come, let's go up to the mountain of the of God, of the house of the God of Jacob. Now here, the house of the God of Jacob is the family that will be the spiritual family. We'll go up to the spiritual family. Now notice he says here that the word of Jehovah shall go forth from Jerusalem and the message from Zion. Let me get that correct here. When he says now, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. Now here then is the law shall go forth out of Zion and the word of Jehovah, and God is going to teach them. Now they're going to be a taught people. Now all of that points to what Jesus emphasized over and over. They shall all be taught of God. That no man can come unto me except the Father sent me draw him. I will raise him up in the last day, as written in the prophets. They shall all be taught of God. He therefore that hath heard and hath learned cometh unto me. At John 6, 44 and 5. Well, this foretold that. This looks unto that. And the word's going to go forth out of the spiritual Zion. I don't think that that has reference to the city of Jerusalem and beginning at the temple area on Pentecost. May have. I think what it means is that this word is going to come from God. Going to be God's law that shall emanate from spiritual Zion. Go forth from spiritual Zion. Now notice further. He will judge between the nations, plural still, and will decide concerning many peoples, plural again. So God is going to judge here among these people. Well, that means that if God is the judge, he'll judge the nations. I pointed that out Sunday night. He does that through Jesus Christ. Also, it means that he will determine who enters into that kingdom. And so, those in the kingdom, I can't determine who's in the kingdom, and you can't either. No individual, no man or group of men can sit in judgment, and say, this person's in the kingdom, and that one's in the kingdom. I don't know whom God has added to it, who he's translated into it. But I know that it'll be only those who have come to him through truth. I know that. And so, if a person obeyed the gospel, my conviction is that God translated him into that kingdom. But only God knows whether he obeyed the gospel or not. Did he merely join the church outwardly, or did he obey the gospel from the heart? God will be that judge. That's what he's saying here. So those that enter into this new relationship, it will be by God's own determination. God, as Paul said, Colossians 1, 12 and 13, giving thanks unto the Father, who made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light, who delivered us out of the power of darkness and translated us into the kingdom of the Son of his love. Who did that? God did it. Well, that's what the prophet's saying here. He will judge between the many nations and the many peoples here. Now notice further, here is the nature of that kingdom. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Now our religious neighbors are constantly quoting that and saying the time will come in the millennium when nations will no longer war with one another. It's not talking about that. It's talking about these peoples here, the nations and the many peoples here who come unto Zion here. Yeah, I should have gotten that down. Who come unto Zion here and unto Jerusalem. That these are the ones that are going to learn war no more. In other words, this kingdom will not be a political kingdom. It will not be a kingdom that is either established by the sword or defended by the sword or extended by it. Now that's the instrument of all political kingdoms. Every political kingdom is established by the sword. It is defended by the sword, and if it extends its borders, it extends them by the sword. Not so in the kingdom of God. They'll beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. They'll not learn war anymore. Nation will not lift up sword against nation. That are these nations that come unto Jerusalem. Now, this has no reference whatever to political kingdoms fighting. They've always fought. They always will fight. They'll be fighting to the last, to the sound of the trumpet. Somewhere, they'll be fighting. Right? So, just remember that this passage is misapplied. When these people tell us that times are coming when there'll be peace on the earth, and they turn to the 11th chapter, and hear that domesticated animals and the wild animals eat and lie down together. Well, we'll. And they say that's going to happen literally. Miss the boat all the way around. The fellow said they shot at a fish and missed the river. And I think a lot of times folks do that religiously. Take a shot at a fish, but they miss the river completely. All right, now that's the latter days. Now that's the messianic period. Now in Hebrews, the 12th chapter, and beginning with about verse 22, I guess. You've not come unto Mount the smokes and quakes, but you've come unto Mount Zion under the heaven of Jerusalem. Under the general assembly of angels and the church of the firstborn who enrolled in heaven, and of the God, the judge of all, and of Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and the blood of sprinkling speaketh better than that of Abel. Now, that's what we've come unto. That's Hebrews 12, beginning with verse 22. I think I started about verse 24 or 6, somewhere like long now. Now, in verse 28 it says, no, I started verse 22. In verse 28 he says, wherefore receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us find grace for which we can offer service well pleasing to God with reverence and awe. So here then, Hebrews 12 says, beginning with verse 22 through 28, that we have come unto that spiritual Zion, that spiritual Jerusalem, under God the judge of all, the very things that Zechariah said would come to pass in the latter days. So we don't push that Isaiah out yonder into the future. That looks back to the past. Alright, now, beginning with the next, now he turns from that unto the condition at the present. I like to call this, here is Jerusalem the ideal. Here is Jerusalem the real. This is what he saw at that particular time. Here's what was happening then. Now, let's look at that. What I want to do is make a contrast tonight between what they were looking for, what they had, and what it would take to procure that which they were looking for. This is what the prophet is dealing with. Right now, he turns from the future, the latter days, the messianic period. He turns from that now to the present time. I mean, the present in his day. His present. The present at that time. O house of Jacob, come ye, and let us walk in the light of Jehovah. Now, back here he said, we'll go up to the house of the God of Jacob. Now he said, O house of Jacob, come ye. Now, if you want to realize the blessing that God has spoken out here, then let's come now unto God and change our ways. Now he says, here, let us walk in the light of Jehovah. For thou hast forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with customs from the east, and a soothsayers like the Philistines, and they strike hands with the children of strength foreign. But let me go back now. Here he said that God has forsaken his people, for thou hast cast off, or rather, because, no, wait a minute, go back now, for thou hast forgotten or forsaken thy people, there in verse 5. Now, he said that God has forsaken the people. Why? Now he tells us why. Why God has forsaken the people, the house of Jacob. Now here's why. Because they are filled with customs from the east, and a soothsayers like the Philistines, and they strike hands with the children of foreigners. All right, now that's the first thing that they do there. Now second, and their land is full of silver and gold, neither is there any end of their treasures. Their land also is full of horses, neither is there any end of their chariots. Now that likewise was something God forbade back in Deuteronomy 17, verses 16 and 17. I'll not take time to read that. But he had told them that they were not to go down into Egypt and buy horses. They were not to rely upon chariots. They were to rely upon Jehovah for their security. But they didn't do that. Right? So first of all, they have acted like foreigners. Second, you have turned from God to a military machine of your own creation here. And now third, now he said it's full of horses and chariots. Their land also is full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. All right, so here now, along with the silver and the gold and the animals and all that, God told them don't rely on that. But that's what they fill the land with. Now further, and he said that's full of idols, creates their own hands. And the mean man is bowed down, and the great man is brought low brought low, therefore forgive them not. In other words, these individuals have been brought low in their worship and all of that. So forgive them not. They reached a condition that the prophet can't even pray for their forgiveness, just like it was in Jeremiah's day. Now he said, calls upon, enter into the rock and hide thee in the dust from the terror of Jehovah and from the glory of his majesty. Now the terror is the judgment. Now because of these things, because you strike hands with foreigners, your land is full of silver and gold, you brought in horses and chariots, it's full of idols here, and you're worshiping the work of your own hands, all of that is the cause now for the terror of Jehovah. That's the day of judgment. It's on its way, and he'll be dealing with that in our book as we go along. And he moves on now, and the terror of Jehovah, and from the glory of his majesty, the lofty looks of man shall be brought low, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and Jehovah alone shall be exalted in that day. Now in that day is the day of verse 10, the terror of Jehovah. When that terror of Jehovah comes, in that day you're going to hunt a rock to hide behind, to escape the terror of Jehovah. Now notice, now for there shall be a day of Jehovah. Now this is an expression that's used over and over here. I'll put all that down. You can put it down there, silver and gold and horses and chariots and idols and idol worship and all that. Now here is the terror of Jehovah is on its way. Now the terror of Jehovah comes, that is a day. I notice that expression, and I've mentioned it so many times in studying the prophets. That should be a day of Jehovah. Now this day of Jehovah is always a day of judgment. Now, if you use the King James, the day of the Lord, either one's all right. The day of the Lord or the day of Jehovah is always a day of judgment. And that's not the Lord's day. I read something a while back where the fellow confused the Lord's day with the day of the Lord. No, the Lord's day is the first day of the week in the New Testament. The day of the Lord, both Old Testament and New Testament, is always a day of judgment. A judgment against the wicked and a day of deliverance for the righteous. That by which the wicked are judged becomes a means of deliverance from the people of God. And that's what you have here. Alright, so he goes on now, the day of Jehovah of hosts. Now the word hosts has two meanings. You can't tell which. Sometimes the hosts mean the hosts of heaven, that is the stars, the planets. Sometimes it means armies of battles. Jehovah is the Lord of battles. In other words, he directs the battles, and they are according to his determination. Alright? And a host upon all that is proud and haughty, and upon all that is lifted up, and it shall be brought low. Now, as a contrast from what it was to what it'll be brought down to. And upon all the cedars of Lebanon that are high and lifted up, and upon all the oaks of Bashan and upon all the high mountains, and upon the hills that are lifted up, and upon every lofty tower, and upon every fortified wall. Now notice, you have three couplets there. Now, whether these are literal or whether they are symbolic, I think it's partly both. Then look at that again. Now here are, first of all, here are your cedars and your oaks. I think that symbolizes the strong and mighty men of the nation that are going to be brought down. It may mean that the forest will be destroyed in the midst of the battle. But I think it has the other significance. Now upon all the high mountains and upon all the hills that are lifted up. Well, now that would be those mountains or those governments that are high and lifted up along with their great ones. They're going to be brought down. That's my understanding of it. I could be wrong on that. And upon every lofty tower and upon every fortified wall. Now these are the place of protection of the cities. There's the wall about it, and the tower here, which they take refuge. So all of these things, the mightiest trees, which I think symbolize men, the mountains and the hills, which symbolize the governments, and here the towers and the walls symbolize the fortifications erected by men. In other words, all of these things are going to be brought down. They're going to be brought low by Jehovah. It'll be a judgment from God here. All right, now notice further. Now another group here, and upon all the ships of Tarshish, and upon all pleasant imagery, that also is going to be brought down. And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of man, of men, shall be brought low. And Jehovah alone shall be exalted in that day. That's the same day that you have up here in the last expression of verse 11, which is the terror of Jehovah in verse 10. So when his judgment comes, all that man considers strong and great and lofty is going to be brought down. Governments, great men, fortifications, and your trade and commerce and economy, all of that will be brought down by the hand of Jehovah. And his doings. The Bible still with this out of the providence of God. Now notice further, and the idols shall utterly pass away. Now note what men will do. And men shall go in the caves of the rocks, and into the holes of the rocks, wait a minute, and go into the caves of the rocks, and in the holes of the earth, from before the terror of Jehovah, and from the glory of his majesty, when he ariseth to shake mightily the earth. Now here, this is not going to be a physical earthquake, but it's going to be an earth-shaking event. That helps to understand statements in the New Testament about the earth will be shaking, the stars will fall, and all that. Those are symbolic of a judgment of God and the falling and passing away of existing things that men trust in and hold to. So here men are going to hide. You have the same statement about Samaria over in Hosea. In Luke 23, you have Jesus saying that men are going to look for the holes to hide in. Revelation, the 6th chapter, the same thing there. The judgment of God. So this does not look to the final judgment. It looks to a judgment that God brings upon men in which they will seek a place of refuge and hiding, but will be unable to escape the terror of that judgment. Or be from God. Can we learn a lesson from that? I think so. I think so. God doesn't change. So I think that time will come here. Our own land. Well, all right. Now, in that day, now see that in that expression, in that day, always refers to whatever the context is talking about. So remember, here is the latter days. That's always messianic. Here is the day of the Lord, of the day of Jehovah. That's always a judgment. In that day, always refers to whatever the context is dealing with. So the context is dealing here with the day of the terror of Jehovah. So that's in that day, in the day of Jehovah's judgment. Now, if you were talking about a messianic prophecy, in that day, that would look then to the coming of the Messiah, don't you see? That expression, in that day, always refers to whatever the context is dealing with. So, I'm sure you will remember that if you don't already know it. Now, in that day, men shall cast away their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which have been made for them to worship, to the moles and to the bats. Moles and bats look for the dark recesses, the dark places. You want to throw those things in holes. You want to throw them back in the cave. You want to throw them away because they're useless in that day of the Lord. So will all that we trust in today. Those great, mighty military powers in which men trust today, why, they're useless. They can't accomplish anything when God determines a judgment. So there's no, what this nation needs to be doing, instead of trying to build this great military machine, is to develop righteousness. righteousness exalts a nation. Righteousness is the first line of defense for any nation. When the righteousness is gone, you can have all the atomic bombs you want to, but when the judgment comes, you're still going to bow to whatever is God's will. This is the thing we need to learn. I think it's worth our while. I may not live to see it, and I may. All right? And some of you will. All right, now, further. In that day, cast away thy idols to the moles and to the bats, to go into the caverns of the rocks, and into the clefts of the ragged rocks, from before the terror of Jehovah, and from the glory of his majesty, when he ariseth to shake mightily the earth. Cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted for? Don't put your trust and faith in men. Put it in God. That's what Isaiah is trying to get across to these people from the beginning of his book to the end of it. Don't put your faith in men. That's a good lesson from Daniel 2. Every idol has its feet of clay. Every one of them. I don't care whether one we build or whether it's a man. When we make a man our idol, or the one in whom we put our faith and trust, that man has feet of clay. Every idol has its feet of clay. All God needs to do is throw the rock at that feet of clay, and down it goes. That's always been true. It continues to be true. So the point is, put your faith in God. Well, he continues on. Now, this is in the chapter 2:5 through 4:1, dealing with the same point here. I should have put that down here. This over here, 2 through 4. This over here is 2:5 through 4:1. Well, he's dealing now with the condition of that. So here then, now he begins his judgment. Now, he points out the condition, idolatry, and all that. Now he introduces two groups at whose feet he lays the charge. The rulers and the women. Women of that day. I want to look at these. That's in chapter 3. We'll get to those. For behold, the Lord Jehovah of hosts doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah stay and staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophets and the diviner and the elder, the captain, the 50 and the honorable man, and the counselor and the expert artificer, and the skillful enchanter. Now, most of those are couplets. There'll be two of them there. Like, for instance, here, this stay of bread and water. And here's the mighty man, the man of war. And the mighty man is the man in power. And the man of war, this soldier, the judge and the prophet. The judge determines certainly, the prophet. Some of them are false and some true. The diviner, the elder. The diviner is one who divines by the livers or pulling out the entrails of an animal or something like that. And he divines. He tells you what's going to happen. Or here's the elder, he's the man of wisdom. The captain of 50, the honorable man, counselor, the expert charmer here, and the skillful enchanter. All of these are individuals to whom they look. They look to these for wisdom. They look to these for guidance, instruction. Now, and I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. God will take away their rulers of wisdom and give them babes and children as well as, not literally, but individuals who are controlled by others and who have no real power, who are not strong individuals. And don't give me those for your princes. No, God said, I'll do that. And the people shall be oppressed, and everyone by another, and everyone by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the old man, and the base against the honorable. Now, back in Leviticus, I guess, where God condemns there the younger not honoring the older. That the elderly person is to be honored by the younger person. Well, they reached the point where the young were impotent, and to the older person, and we're pretty well in that condition today. Age does not carry respect with it that once it did in this country, but youth looks upon anybody over 30 as being completely out of date. If it did, I think some of those that looked at it are now over 30, they think they were wrong back there, because they think they're pretty smart now, but I don't know whether they're smarter than they were. But nevertheless, the point is here, and against the base and the honorable man. Now, so here's your condition now that exists there. And people will be oppressed by these babes for rulers. Now, as I said to you Sunday, that I think God sets up men that are going to accomplish his purpose. Sometimes he wants a nation to get into a predicament where it's going to be destroyed and have to fight its way out. If he does, he raises up men like that. I voted. But on the other hand, I wonder sometimes whether I should fool with it or not. After all, God is in control. The only way I think of it, maybe he uses you and me to achieve his purpose in getting the person there. But whoever gets there, I look at it as a work of providence. That individual, there's something that God is working toward that this man or these men will accomplish. It may be to build up the nation. It may be for the collapse of the nation. I leave that with him. I don't try to look into God's mind any farther than the Spirit has revealed it. But I know it's revealed that. All right? So here he says then that I will give them babes to rule over them. The people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly, and so on. Number 6. When a man shall take hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, thou hast clothing, be thou our ruler, and let this ruin be under thy hand. Ruin's coming. Now, because you've got a suit of clothes, well, we'll elect you to be the head of the government, yeah? Because that's about all he does have, don't you see? He's got a suit of clothes. Something like that. The idea is that I want you to do it. I don't want to be that, but I put you in, that this ruin may come under your hand and not mine. For the ruin is coming. I wouldn't be president for all the money in Fort Knox. I don't want the ruin to come under me. Because it's going to come. I don't know where it comes, and the present administration or the next one or when, but it's on its way. Right? In that day shall he lift up his voice, saying, I will not be a healer. That is a binder up. For in my house is neither bread nor clothing. You shall not make me ruler of the people. Nobody wants the job. For Jerusalem is ruined, and Judah is fallen. And literally, but that's what you call the prophetic perfect. The prophetic perfect is when the prophet speaks of something future as though it had already happened or already was. And over they do that. So that's called a prophetic perfect. I don't know why, it's the name that people gave to it. You had to call it something. Like you do that, had to call it something, so they called it had to call. And so you had to call it something, so this is what you called it. Right? For Jerusalem is ruined, and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against Jehovah to provoke the eyes of his glory. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they desire that, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. And Sodom openly committed the homosexuality openly. So the nation here is openly committing its sins with no shame. Just like this nation today, openly endorsing homosexuality, endorsing this live-in deal today, fornication and adultery, endorsing abortion, all that sort of thing, endorsing gambling, all of these things openly and no shame there. Well, that's the way it was back in Sodom. That's the way it was in Jerusalem. Woe unto their soul, for they have done evil unto themselves. Say ye of the righteous, it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. And you say, be well with them, but they're all, I don't know if they're any righteous. Woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for what his hands have done shall be done unto him. How did Paul say it? Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Amos taught the same thing. So what they were doing would come back upon their own head. Well, what have we sown in this country? Well, you know what we've sown, and now they're going to reap. You can't sow wild oats and pray for a crop failure and expect God to hear it. We're going to reap according to our sowing. Every sowing will bring about its own reaping. Every reaping is a result of a sowing. So that means then that judgment's on its way for the sowing of our wild oats in this country. Well, let's move on hurriedly and drop on down here now. That was about verse 11. Woe unto the wicked, what the hands have done, that shall they do. All right, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they that lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. All right, so now he starts out back here with the rulers back there in the first few verses of the chapter. And he moves on to the condition here that existed. And now he says that the rulers that lead thee cause thee to err. But I don't have to follow the error of a ruler. I'm still responsible. I can rebel against that, as I said Sunday night. Peter says, we shall obey God rather than men. So I've got a choice. I can obey God or obey men. But as long as the man's law does not conflict with God's law, I'm to obey the laws of the land. I made that clear Sunday morning as well as Sunday night. Right? And that's still true now. But these people have followed the rulers. And I think the rulers of government is essential. I know that. I'm pretty well convinced that we've had entirely too much government in my generation, the 70, 80 years that I've lived. Now then, we're reaping the consequence of that. And looking too much to government. He gets his hand into too many things. Everything. All right? But they led us to earn and destroy the people. Now he judges these rulers. Jehovah standeth up to contend and standeth to judge the peoples, or the people. So as he judges the peoples of the nation, so he will judge his people of the thought. Jehovah will enter into judgment with the elders of his people and the princes thereof. It is ye that have eaten up the vineyard. The spoil of the poor is in your houses. What mean ye that you crush my people and grind the face of the poor? Yea, you crush them as wheat, you grind them as wheat, saith the Lord Jehovah of hosts. So his judgment is going to begin with the rulers, with the elders and the rulers, the princes there. Well, that's where it begins. Now it turns to the women. And here is a rather unusual judgment, but it teaches a great deal. It teaches us the influence of women in the history and destiny of the nation. I want you to know, moreover, Jehovah said, because the daughters of Zion are holy, and walk with outstretched necks, and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tingling with their feet. In other words, little bells or chains on that, so it's attract attention. And the way they walk, that sensuous walk and sensuous look, such as characterizes. Look at people on the television. You can tell that they've trained themselves to walk like they do, to mince as they do it, and to attract attention to certain parts of the body. Well, that's what they were doing here. Therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and Jehovah will lay bare their secret parts, that to which you would attract attention by the way you dress and walk. Well, that's going to be, will be laid bare before crude, rude enemies that will conquer you. That's what will come. In that day the Lord will take away the beauty of their anklets and the cauls, that's the networks, the coverings, shawls, and the crescents, and the pendants, and the bracelets, and the mufflers, and the head ties, and the ankle chains, and the sashes, and the perfume boxes, and the amulets, the rings, and the nose jewels, the festival robes, and the mantles, and the shawls, and the satchels, and the hand mirrors, and the fine linen, and the turbans, and the veils. All of those, some 21 of them, I believe, if I count them correctly, some 21 items there of their apparel, either jewelry or perfume or clothing, but all of it emphasized. And the thing that God condemns here is not the wearing of these things. Neither did Peter. When Peter said that a woman doesn't win a husband by the way she braids her hair and putting on a jewel and apparel, he isn't condemning the wearing of apparel and a jewel. He's condemning the heart back of that that finds expression in that. That's what he's doing here. Now, here, what they're wearing outwardly, which he condemns, is an expression of the sensual, worldly heart that prompted them to want to attract attention and to do as they did. Now, that's what we've got today. That's the idea today. Dress, perfume, and jewels, and all of that expresses a worldly heart. Generally speaking, I wouldn't say always, but generally that's what it does. A worldly heart. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet spices, there shall be rottenness. And instead of a girdle, a rope, that is a rope about them to lead them into captivity. And instead of well-set hair, baldness. And instead of a robe, a girding of sackcloth, which was worn in times of mourning and times of sorrow. Branding instead of beauty. That is, they'd be branded as a slave, instead of wearing the beauty that they sought. Thy men shall fall by the sword, and thy mighty in the war. And her gates shall lament. That is the place where they met at the gates to discuss events, to talk about events, and all of that. Why, they'll be lamenting and mourning there. And she shall be desolate at Jerusalem, and sit upon the ground, that is, the daughter of Zion shall the people there. And seven women shall take hold of one man in that day, saying, we will eat our own bread, and wear our own apparel, only let us be called by thy name. Take thou away our reproach. In other words, the men would be so decimated by war, that seven women, and that's just a perfect number, maybe 3 or 4, 10 or 12, whatever. But to take hold of one man and say, we'll eat our own bread, we'll earn our own living, we'll wear our own apparel, we'll take care of that. Only let us be called by thy name. Let us have a man to whom we can look. That'll be the condition. Unnatural? Yes. I preached a sermon on that one time and made an application to denominationalism. I think denominationalism follows that pattern. Denominations say, we'll eat our own bread, that is, we'll provide our own spiritual food. We'll wear our own clothing. We'll provide our own spiritual covering. Only let us be called by the name of Christ. That's all we want. But that's not what God wants. Unnatural. All right, take away our report now. Now, in this fourth chapter, now comes here after the cleansing. Now, here's what they must pass through. So here is Jerusalem, the redeemed. All right? Now, here they've been redeemed now through the destruction of the city of fire, through the blasting of fire in the city. All right, now notice that through judgment, what I'm trying to say. All right, now two. In that day, now that day here is the day of the judgment and that which will follow the judgment. All right, and that day shall the branch of Jehovah be beautiful. Now this branch, we'll discuss this more fully in the 11th chapter when we come to it. The root or the branch of Jesse. David was the descendant. And then over in Zechariah, we'll turn to that and discuss it there, this branch. The man whose name is the branch, Zechariah 6. All right, in that day the branch of Jehovah, shall the branch of Jehovah be beautiful and glorious. And the fruit of the land shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel. Now those escaped will be the remnant. Now Isaiah introduced the remnant here. So they're going to be a remnant. Well, Paul said in Romans 11 and 5, even now, there is a remnant according to the election of grace. And he mentioned the ninth chapter that was a remnant that should be saved. So God never promised more than a remnant. Those that escaped, that'll be a remnant. All right? That escaped of Israel, that's the remnant there. Now the fruit shall be excellent. What will be the fruit? It'll be the fruit of repentance. It'll be the fruit of a changed life. The fruit of a spiritual fruit. It will be in that day. And shall come to pass that he that is left in Zion, and he that remaineth in Jerusalem, shall be called holy, even everyone that is written among the living in Jerusalem. These are the spiritual living. Now, they're called holy. So instead of being great, instead of being wealthy, they're going to be holy. All right? That's what we taught in the New Testament. Be holy, for I am holy. And striving for holiness in 2 Corinthians 7:1. All right? Now, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall purge the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof. Now, how's he going to do it? I said, by the Spirit, or blast. I think the word blast is better there. By the blast of justice, and by the blast of burning. Here, as you take a torch in the blast of burning here, and the blast of justice, as you burn out the dross there. So here is a judgment that's coming, and following that judgment, there will be then the branch that will grow up out of his place, and the people turn to God through him, a redeemed people. But this remnant through which the branch comes is that remnant that escapes and who has gone through this judgment and come out purified and redeemed. Now these will be the remnant that come back from Babylon, don't you see? So all of this is looking now what God will do in the future. And Jehovah will create. Now that's the same word you have in Genesis 1. God will be a new creation over the whole habitation of Mount Zion and over her assemblies, a cloud and smoke by day, and the shining of a flaming fire by night. Now those are the figures of Jehovah as he led Israel out of Egypt by night. For over all the glory shall be spread a covering, a protection. And there shall be a pavilion for a shade in the daytime, from the heat, and for a refuge and for a covert from the storm and from rain. In other words, the people will find refuge in Jehovah, and there they will find their protection from all the forces that will seek to destroy them. There is today no external force that can destroy the people of God. You can take my life, but you can't touch my spirit, my inner life. That's involved except from within. But the church can destroy itself from within. And this, I think, is what we are doing in some localities. All right. So what you have here, then, and over here, is after the planter, here's the branch and those things. I didn't have time to write them down. There's your branch, and here's your holy people, and all that. So in the second chapter of these verses, here's the latter days. Here was the present condition at that time in chapter 2:5-4:1. And then over here in 4:2-6, now you have the redeemed remnant that have come through there, through whom the branch is going to come, and all in that city will be called holy. We are holy people and not a great people. And he deals with that later on.